For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It is November the 22nd. We're in Malachim, and we are continuing with our special series of shiurim to wrap up all the loose ends, as many as we can. So we have developed the fact that what is going on with the destruction, both of the northern kingdom, which is the house of Achav, being totally destroyed by Yehu ben Nimshi, the new king, and also the total destruction of David HaMelech's line, near total destruction of David HaMelech's line, which goes on simultaneously. Yehu contributes, and so does, of course, Asalia, the evil mother of the king. And that entire episode is a result of the primarily the sin of Nov Ira Kohanim, destruction of Nov, and we traced Rus and Arpa, and we traced it down to David and Goliath, and then to David and Yishbi Benov and the sin of Nov. We showed how what Arpa represents is the problem with why the Moavim cannot join Klal Yisrael. We showed that what Rus represents is why the Moavi women can join Klal Yisrael. We showed how David represents Rus. We showed how the destruction of Nov really represents the negative side of Moav, of Arpa, and David's very subtle involvement, which on his madrega he's being held accountable for, is also is moving over to that side of things, to the Arpa side of things, and that what is going on in the destruction now is also a result of the whole thing, Achav's house, how it's behaving, how Klal Yisrael is behaving. We talked about chesed, and we talked about the lack of chesed. We talked about tznius and the lack of tznius. And we talked about being focused on oneself versus being focused on others and on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, against this whole backdrop, we know that there was, we discussed it at the time, there had been a terrible famine in Shomron, and we talked about that famine. It was a 7-year famine that went on. And tonight, we're going to discuss the famines, because that famine that happened in Shomron ultimately brings about the destruction. We talked about it at the time, how the famine triggers the events that happen afterwards, because the other player besides Yehu ben Nimshi and Asali and all that is the country of Aram, which is the primary country that is attacking Klal Yisrael at this time, first with the king Ben-Hadad, and then with his successor Hazael. We discussed that as well. So tonight, we're going to look at this famine. At least that's the first thing we're going to do. The Medrash tells us that it's brought in the beginning. It's brought in several places, but one of the main places it's brought is in Megillas Rus, right in the beginning, where it says, "Vayhi b'mei Shvot ha-shoftim, vayhi rav ba'aretz," there was a famine in the land. So the Medrash tells us, there was a famine, a strong famine, Havakafan Takif Ba'arad Yisrael. There was a strong famine in Eretz Yisrael. Asarte Kafnin Takif in Isgazar means Shemaya. There were 10 strong famines that were decreed from heaven. Lemeheve Ba'alma, that would be in the world. Min Yoma Di'is Bare Alma, from the day the world was created. Ad Yes Malka Meshicha, until the Melech HaMashiach will come. Lo'ocha Vahon Dayari Ara, to admonish those who live in the world. Interesting way of characterizing the coming of Mashiach, to admonish it's the famines that are admonishing the people of the world, not Melech Mashiach. So that these famines, their job is to give tochacha, to give Musar, to admonish the people living in the world. Now, the famines are, of course, centered around Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't mean there are only 10 famines, but it means these 10 are the significant famines of the history. Kafan Kadma, when is the first famine? B'yomei Adam, in the days of Adam Arishon. When was there a famine in the days of Adam Arishon?
He was kicked out.
Thrown out of Gan Eden. Oh. And now he didn't work the land. That was a famine. Kafan Tinyan, the second famine, B'yomei Lemech, in the days of Lemech. Lemech, Noach's father, when Noach is born, he says, Zeyenachameinu, this one will give us an easier time from all the troubles we're having. And he says, Minho Adamar She'erara Hashem, from the land that has been cursed by Hashem. It was difficult. Noach, it says, the Medrash tells us, fashioned for the people plows. He invented the plow, that he showed them how to use it, that they were having difficulty planting, and he saved them. Kafan Tlisai, the third famine, B'yomei Avraham, is in the days of Avraham. We know in Lech Lecha, Avraham comes to Israel, and then there is a famine in the land. Kafan Rivi'ai, the fourth famine, B'yomei Yitzchak, is in the days of Yitzchak. And Parshas told us, last week's Parsha, there was another famine, and Yitzchak has to go to the land that pushed him. Kafan Chamishai, the fifth famine, that's perhaps the most famous one, B'yomei Yaakov, days of Yaakov, that's how we ended up in Mitzrayim, was through that fifth famine. Kafan Shesisae, the sixth famine, is this one here in Rus. B'yomei Boaz is in the days of Boaz, the Mizkrei Ivtsan, who's called Ivtsan Tzadika, the Tzadik, the Min Beis Lachem Yehuda, who's from Beis Lachem Yehuda. Kafan Shivi'ae, the seventh famine, B'yomei David Malka di Yisrael, was in the days of David Melech Yisrael. At the end of his life, it says there was a famine for 3 years, a three-year famine. Kafan Tmina'e, the eighth famine, B'yomei Eliyahu Hanavi. Remember, Eliyahu Hanavi withheld the rain, and there was a famine. Kafan Tishia'e, the ninth famine, B'yomei Elisha B'Shomron, in the days of Elisha in Shomron. That is our famine. Kafan Asirai, the tenth famine, Asid Lamehevi, is going to be in the future. We might be living the future now. Lo kafan lamecha lachma velo tzachusa lemishtei maya, is not a famine to eat bread, nor is it a famine to drink water, a thirst to drink water. Elahein lemishma piskam nevuah min kadam Hashem, rather is a famine to hear the word of Hashem, meaning it is a famine that we do not have the word of Hashem. As I mentioned when we talked about this the first time, that either means a famine from nevuah, from prophecy, in which case we've been enduring this famine ever since the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, ever since the last Nevi'im died, or it means something more than that, a famine from having any real direction, not having real understanding what Hashem wants, which is something that has been developing over time. Perhaps it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know if we are currently in this famine, if this famine is going to happen, but it is something along those lines of being not hearing from Hashem, not having the word of Hashem. So the 10th famine is the one that will herald the Mashiach. That's the last one. And that is we perhaps are enduring it now. But it is not a famine for food or water. But the first nine were all famines for food and water. That's what the famines were. Now,
does it say how long the last famine was?
Doesn't say. Doesn't say.
Of course not.
Then tell us.
Then we'd know.
Right, then we know. Now, well, we don't know when it starts.
We don't know if it was this one or not, because we could figure out
perhaps
when it came from.
Right. Now, a famine. Let's understand what a famine is before we get to the last one. A famine is where food and water are scarce. That's a famine. A famine can happen through a drought, it can happen through other things, but a famine is where the food and water are scarce. We, human beings, we people have two parts to us. We have a neshama, and we have a guf. the nature of the guf, we'll get to neshama soon, but the nature of the guf, the body, is that the body needs constant care and constantly to be taken care of. If a body is ignored, it will die. If a person chooses not to eat or drink, the person will die. Hashem gave us, Baruch Hashem, feelings, senses that force us to take care of our bodies. When we don't eat, we feel hungry. When we don't drink, we feel thirsty. If we wouldn't feel those things, we could theoretically go for days and not eat. Take some time to eat, you know, like a person get busy and just, right? You got to prepare the food, you got to buy the food, it takes time. A person could just not do it. And so Hashem built into us the feeling of need that we have to eat and we have to drink. He built into us the feeling of fatigue. We have to sleep, otherwise we might work ourselves to exhaustion and die through that. Hashem built into us nerve endings that sense pain, so we know when something isn't working right, or is something, otherwise we could bang ourselves and not realize it. We could bleed and not realize that we're bleeding. So Hashem made our bodies sensitive to those things that are detrimental to our bodies. You have to breathe. And if the air isn't right, we cough. That's how we know the air isn't right. If we wouldn't cough, we wouldn't know. We could poison ourselves through breathing and not realize that we're poisoning ourselves through breathing. So that's the way Hashem made our bodies, which is a big chesed, that he did that. We don't have to keep a checklist, make sure we ate, make sure we drank, make sure we breathed, make sure we slept. But at the same time, because our bodies need constant care, which they do, constant care, that also makes us dependent. We are naturally dependent. We are very dependent. We need food. We need water. We need sleep. We need air to breathe. We need these things. If these things wouldn't be there, we would die. Air to breathe is the one that we need all the time. But Hashem also did a chesed there with the breathing. As soon as I say this, everybody's going to think about it. But the fact of the matter is, we don't have to think about breathing. Breathing is something that just happens. We breathe. So a person can ignore it. Because since it's something you have to do all the time, if we had to think about it, we wouldn't be able to think about anything else. If we had to think about it every single second, then how could we do anything else? So Hashem, here, although we are very dependent on air to breathe, but it's not something we naturally think about it until, God forbid, there's problems with it. There's trouble. What's that?
You have a stuffy nose and have to think about it.
Right, that's right. So if there's smoke, that kind of thing. But with eating and drinking, that Hashem did not make like breathing. We don't need it as constantly as breathing, but we do need it frequently. We do need it frequently, and you have to think about it. Someone's got to be thinking about food in any family unit. Someone's got to be thinking about it. Someone's got to think about buying it, preparing it, serving it, cleaning it up, right? Plus, I'm sorry to mention this, but eating means one also has to expel the waste. So there's this constant process. If you think about how much brain power we put into our digestive systems, or if you want to make it into a family thing, how much that brain power in a family unit is put into the entire digestive system from getting in the car to drive to Kroger, from there in all the way through the whole system, everything, it's a ton of focus, a ton of time. Therefore, the thing that most represents our dependency is food. Even though breathing is more constant, but because one can do that without thinking, it does not represent our dependency as much as food does. Food, more than anything else, represents our dependency. And it's dependency on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, we can delude ourselves into thinking it's a dependency on a good job, We can delude ourselves into thinking it's a dependency on the farmer. We can delude ourselves into thinking it's a dependency on rain and the sun. You know, you can do all kinds of things. You can trick yourself. But we know ultimately it's dependency on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And food represents that dependency more than anything else. A famine is an announcement from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that says, hello, I'm here. Did you forget about me? Right? That's what a famine is. More than anything else, a famine forces everybody to realize that we are dependent. A famine is an incredible takedown to arrogance. Person becomes arrogant. Kochi ve'otzem yadi, I am who I am because I am who I am. A famine knocks out everybody. It doesn't differentiate. There's no food. A famine offsets arrogance. A famine offsets a person who lacks bitachon, lacks trust in Hashem. A famine even offsets something a little less terrible, which would be someone who is ignoring Hashem. I'm just having a good time. I'm just living life. I'm not thinking about anything. I'm not specifically rebelling against Hashem. I'm not arrogant. I'm just ignoring. I'm just having a good time. Well, if there's a famine, God forbid, no one has a good time. Everybody's got to focus on becoming more serious. So a famine is the ultimate tochacha. It's the ultimate admonishment that Hashem sends. And there are 10 of them in the world. Now, if there are officially 10, that means that Hashem's plan for it to come to fruition requires these 10 famines. It can't be that these 10 famines are somehow happenstance. If it's the number 10, just like the Medrash says, there are 10 shiros, there are 10 songs. We've gone through that at other times. To say that there are 10 famines means that they are significant. Now, had Adam HaRishon not eaten from the Eitz Hadas, so none of these would have been necessary. But once he did, that set into motion a different plan than what would have been, and that plan involves these famines. Now, I can't say for certain that if at any point Klal Yisrael would have brought Mashiach, perhaps that would have arrested the process. It wouldn't have been necessary to have all 10 anymore. Perhaps. If when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, it would have been the permanent Beis HaMikdash, and that's that, maybe there would have been no need for any of the famines past Shlomo HaMelech. But where we are today, we know these 10 famines are necessary, and they are necessary steps in the process of the world. Each of these famines is a watershed event in the history of the world. Each of these famines represents a significant change in either triggering something or setting something up that is the next step in the process of bringing the world to where it has to get to. Now, again, since a famine is a punishment, it's an admonishment, it is a result of people's bad behavior. But it is still, these 10 are those triggers. So the first one is obvious. The first one is obvious. Because Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz HaDa'as, he and mankind was punished, that now, b'zeh asapecha tocha lechem, you will eat by the sweat of your brow. It became extremely difficult to produce food. Where before then, think about this for a moment, before eating from the Eitz HaDa'as, Adam and Chava's eating digestive needs were like breathing. You didn't have to think about it. There was no shopping. There was no making money. There was no preparation of food. There was no cleaning up. I don't know if there was even relieving oneself. Like with the man, there is no relieving oneself. It could be that in Gan Eden there is none either. I don't know. But all I know is there certainly was not the focus that we have today by any stretch of the imagination. When Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz HaDa'as, now mankind has to think about it. And think about it a lot. Incredible focus on food.
It's interesting, when you're a fetus, you get the food and drink without any thought,
right,
and you don't have the breathing at all.
Right, that's right. It's right.
It's
that's
only
right.
after you come out that you even have
breathe.
The breathing.
Yeah, yeah.
The fetus, and that's when you have to worry about the food and drink. Before then, it just...
It's just there. Right.
It's like Gan Eden.
Right.
Right there.
Right. Someone else is worrying about it. Right. So that's the first one. The first one clearly is a watershed event. There's no question about it. Now, the second one is in the days of Lemech. The second one is the precursor to the Mabul. The second one heralds in the Mabul. Noach is born into a world that is experiencing a famine. And Noach saves them. He corrects the problem. Zayinachamenu, this one, this Noach, he's going to make things better for us. And he does. But when Noach is 600 years old, there is a great flood. Medrash tells us that before the flood, there was such incredible affluence in the world. Affluence not in the form of money, but in the form of bracha. Just the way the weather, the food, everything was just perfect. And people took that bracha, and rather than serve Hashem through it, they did averos, and they did plenty of averos. And therefore comes the Mabul and destroys everything. So here, where there had been a famine, which was to trigger Teshuvah, and Noach comes to the scene and brings about prosperity, and he's a big tzaddik, but it doesn't go anywhere. People fail. And therefore the Mabul has to hit. But it is the famine that is the precursor. The famine is like the warning. Shape up or there's going to be destruction. They don't shape up, there's a Mabul. That's the second one. The third one is Avraham Avinu. Now, here we know that this famine was one of the tests of Avraham, one of the Asar Nisyonos of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu leaves Haran, comes to Eretz Canaan at the behest of Hashem, and then there's a famine. And because of that famine, Avraham has to go to Mitzrayim. And in Mitzrayim, Sarah is taken, miracles happen, Sarah is released, they come back. The Avraham and Sarah going down to Mitzrayim was a Maisa Avo Simen Labanim, was something that was done by our ancestors, which was symbolic of what was going to happen later to their children. Just as Avraham and Sarah had to go to Mitzrayim, so too later Yaakov's children first, and then Yaakov also would go to Mitzrayim. And just as Paro took Sarah, so too we were enslaved. And then just as Paro was beaten up for taking Sarah, eventually the Egyptians were beaten up for taking us. And then we left with great wealth, just as Avraham left with great wealth. So although the famine in the days of Avraham was only one of 10 nisyonos, of 10 tests, but it was a precursor for the future. But we can't ignore what the Medrash tells us, which is it was to admonish people. Now, who's it admonishing? The famine in the days of Avraham Avinu. Can't be that it's admonishing Avraham, because it was a nisayon for Avraham. He wasn't being punished. So who is it punishing? What'd you say?
The Canaanim.
That's where it happened. It didn't happen in Mitzrayim. It happened in Canaan. What are they being punished for? So I would suggest Avraham Avinu, who represents Hashem, has just entered Canaan. They now have an incredible tzaddik in their midst. Till then, they don't have an Avraham Avinu there. Now, there were other people. There was Shem. There was Aver. There were some big people. But not Avraham. Avraham is the one who... Avraham is Mekarves HaAnashim. Avraham brings the men close to Hashem. Sarah Mekarves HaAnashim. Sarah brings the women close to Hashem. And they come into Canaan. Then there is an expectation that the people of Canaan respond to the fact that you have an Avraham and a Sarah now in Canaan. Some do respond, but evidently not enough. And a famine hits the land. I'm not taking away from the fact that it's a test for Avraham, but it also, remember, Hashem can have multiple reasons for doing the same thing. it also is an admonishment. It's a tochacha to the people of Canaan. Then that's the third famine. Comes the fourth famine. That's Yitzchak. Now here, the Torah itself tells us that with Yitzchak, it says that there was a famine. Kasher hayabi me Avraham. Just as there was a famine in the days of Avraham. Meaning, it's a repeat. There's another famine. The Torah itself emphasizes this is just like it was in the days of Avraham. I would suggest the same idea. That now you have Yitzchak and Rivka in Eretz Yisrael, which is a new power in Eretz Yisrael. Sodom has been destroyed. Yitzchak and Rivka have Yaakov and Esav. There's a new energy going on. People are not responding. There's a famine. They have to go to the land of Plishtim. The fifth famine, which is Yaakov Avinu, that's clear and obvious what that triggers. That triggers Mitzrayim. Because of that famine, we ended up in Mitzrayim, and we ended up fulfilling the Bris Ben Avisarim, which is that we would be slaves in a land not our own. That's the fifth famine. The sixth famine, as the Medrash tells us, is the famine of Rus. So we went through Megillas Rus in great detail. We learned it together. And at that time, we pointed out that Megillas Rus is the story of how a famine, there was a famine in the land. V'yishai holy is David. The last three words of the Megillah. How the famine brings about the birth of David HaMelech. The purpose of this famine is to bring about David HaMelech. It is an admonishment to the people as well. And it triggers the birth of David because of the tshuva that it brought about. Here the famine does bring about tshuva, real tshuva. Boaz leads the effort of the tshuva. And as a result, David HaMelech is born. That's the sixth famine. The seventh famine is in the days of David HaMelech. Now here, you should know that the seventh famine is something which fits in very much to what we've been talking about the past few weeks. Because why was there a famine for 3 years in the days of David HaMelech? So the Navi tells us that David asked from Hashem, and he told them, Al Shaul ve'al Beis Hadamim. It is because Shaul was not eulogized properly, and it is because of the destruction of Nov Yerachonim. Not because of the destruction of Nov, really, but because of a collateral damage of the destruction of Nov. Because the Givonim, who because of their poor behavior, were relegated by Yehoshua to become water drawers and wood choppers for the Kohanim. When Nov was destroyed, they lost their livelihood. And therefore, since they were not dealt with properly, therefore there was a famine. So we have a famine that is for those reasons. That famine ends up, this is the end of David HaMelech's life, and that famine ultimately will bring about the resolution of a certain element of Nov Yerachonim. We don't have the time tonight to go into that particular famine. That's a very fascinating famine, how that works. But that too fits into the Nov Yerachonim story. The eighth famine is Eliyahu HaNavi, and the ninth famine is Elisha. Now, here we're in more familiar territory. The eighth famine in the days of Eliyahu HaNavi, remember why it started? Remember he held back the rain? Why did he hold back the rain? Remember the story how Chiyo Beis Ha'eli?
Wasn't that with the circle? And he said about that they said that about Moshe, and that Moshe was the prophet of God and his word. And so he was trying to stand up for Hashem by taking the rain
That's
away.
That's right. That's right. Chil Beis Ha'eli rebuilt Yericho.
Right.
And in the process, all of his kids died. And Hashem told Eliyahu HaNavi to go and be Menachem Avol. He says, I don't want to go because they're going to say things against Hashem. And Hashem says, go anyway, and I'll give you the key to the rain. And if they misbehave, you'll take away the rain. Eliyahu goes. He meets Achav on the way. Achav is going to be Menachem Avol. They have that conversation where Achav says that the Talmud is that Hashem doesn't carry out what's supposed to be because Hashem didn't take away the rain, and therefore because if it can't be that the curse of Yehoshua came true because the curse of Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come true, and as a result the rain is taken away. That rain being taken away by Eliyahu HaNavi was a trigger to bring about tshuva from the terrible reign of Achav and Izebel. And an incredible thing happens because of the rain. The rain being taken away, it becomes terrible. People are dying right and left. Hashem tells Eliyahu HaNavi, it's enough. You've got to bring the rain back. And he meets Ovadia. And you end up with the great story of Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel. That's all because of the rain being taken away. On the Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel, you have an unbelievable tshuva that takes place from the Jewish people. They fall on their faces and they say, Hashem hu hu Elokim, Hashem hu hu Elokim. Like we say at the end of Yom Kippur. We're quoting them when we say that. Unbelievable tshuva. Everybody does tshuva. Exactly what the famine is supposed to bring about. And then the next day, Izebel sends a message to Eliyahu HaNavi, I'll get you yet. You'll see. This isn't going to do anything. And Eliyahu HaNavi says, forget it. It's a waste of time. The Jewish people are hopeless. They're hopeless. Even after Har HaKarmel, it doesn't help. And that's when Hashem told Eliyahu HaNavi, it's time for you to travel. And he has Eliyahu HaNavi end up where?
With the woman.
After that. He has to travel.
Because he has to give back the life of the child to give up the key.
Yeah, that was before Har HaKarmel. You're right, but that was before Har HaKarmel. Okay. Right. He has to travel to Har Sinai. Mm-hmm. Eliyahu HaNavi goes to Har Sinai. Now here, I'm gonna start reading inside. And when this is a little bit of review. We did talk about this at the time. We're in Malachim Aleph, in Perek Yutes, chapter 19. In Pasuk Beis is what I just told you. Verse 2. Vatishlach Izebel Malach El Eliyahu Lemar. Izebel sent a messenger to Eliyahu saying, Kol yasin al kim v'chol yosifun, so Hashem should do and so should be. You should do even more. If I sin others, I swear. Ki cha'es machar asim es nafshecha kenefesh achad mehem. By tomorrow, I'll have you dead. Like you killed the Nevi'ei Habal. It'll be just like that. He ran away and he came to Beersheba. He dropped off his nar there. Pasuk Dalid, and he went to the Midbar, a day's journey, and he came and he sat under a tree. And he asked to die. And he said, Rav ata Hashem, kach nafshi ki lo tov anochi me'avos. I'm no better than my ancestors. Forget it. The Jewish people can't be helped. So then Hashem sends him to Har Sinai. I'm skipping ahead. He comes to the end of Pasuk Ches, the end of verse 8, says, Ad Har Ho Elokim Chorev, comes to the mountain of Hashem to Chorev, to Har Sinai. Pasuk Tes, Vayavo Sham El Hami'ara, comes to the cave, Vayal En Sham, and he sleeps there. Now, this cave is the same cave that Moshe Rabbeinu was in when Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Hareini nas kvodecha, show me your honor. When Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, after we sinned with the egel hazav, with the golden calf, and now he went up to beg forgiveness for us. Now he's getting the second set of luchos, and he's in the cave, and he says, well, this is before he gets into the cave, he says to Hashem, show me your honor. Hashem says, I cannot show you my face. Ki lo yirani adam v'chai, no one can see me and live. But he says to him, I will put you benikras hatsur, in the cleft of the rock, a cave, and I'll cover you with my palm until I pass by, and then I'll pass by, then I'll remove my palm, you'll see my back, my face cannot be seen. Whatever that means, we discussed it in our Chumash here, whatever that means, but Hashem is revealing to Moshe Rabbeinu something that no one had ever seen before. And it is in this episode that Hashem shows Avram Avinu, teaches Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'chanun, Erech Apayim V'chesed, the 13 Midos of Rachamim. That's where he learns it. Moshe Rabbeinu always davens for Klal Yisrael. Right? You remember that. Moshe Rabbeinu, we owe our lives to Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem was going to destroy us on more than one occasion, and it was only because Moshe Rabbeinu davened for us. And his life was not in danger. Hashem would have made him into the new Klal Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu instead davens for us. Moshe Rabbeinu does not forsake Klal Yisrael. Hashem sends Eliyahu to the same cave where the Yud Gimel Midos were taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. Then Hashem says to Eliyahu, Ma lechafo Eliyahu, what are you doing here, Eliyahu? Pasuk Yud, this is a critical pasuk. Vayomer, he said, Kano kinesi l'Hashem elokei tzvakos. I have been zealous for Hashem, the God of hosts. Ki ozvu rizcha b'nei Yisrael, because the Jews have forsaken your covenant. Es mizbechosecha harasu. Your altars, they have destroyed. Ves neviecha hargu v'charav, and your prophets, they have killed by the sword. Vayivarseh ani levadi, I'm the only one left. Vayivakshu es nafshi l'kachta, now they want to kill me too. So is Eliyahu Navi defending Klal Yisrael, or is he prosecuting Klal Yisrael? He's prosecuting. Okay. So then Hashem says to him, Vayomer etzev amanat avahar, lifnei Hashem, go out and stand on the mountain in front of Hashem. V'nei Hashem over, Hashem is going to pass by, just like with Moshe Rabbeinu. V'ruach gedola v'chazak ma'farek harem m'shaber osloim, lifnei Hashem, there's going to be this incredible wind, incredible hurricane force wind. Lo v'ruach Hashem, Hashem is not in this wind. And after the wind, there's going to be a rash, an incredible noise. Lo v'rash Hashem, Hashem is not in the noise and the thunder and whatever that is. V'acharash esh, after the noise is fire. Lo v'esh Hashem, Hashem is not in the fire. V'acharash kol t'mamadaka is a very subtle sound. Very quiet, subtle sound. That's where Hashem can be found. Which means Hashem is not into the fire and brimstone. Sometimes it's necessary for punishment. Sometimes it has to be that. But that's not where Hashem's Shekhinah resides. Hashem's Shekhinah resides in the quiet, in the subtle sound, in the calm, in the serene. That's where Hashem resides. So when Eliyahu heard that, so he covered his face with his aderis, with his cloak. And then, Pasuk Yud Gimel, look at the end of the Pasuk. It happens. V'hinei lav kol, there's a sound that comes to him. Vayomer, Ma lechafo Eliyahu, what are you doing here, Eliyahu? Hashem repeats the question. Same question, he repeats it. And Eliyahu Navi says, Vayomer, Kano kinesi l'Hashem elokei tzvakos, I have been zealous for Hashem, the God of hosts. Ki ozvu rizcha b'nei Yisrael, because the Jews have forsaken your covenant. Es mizbechosecha harasu. They have destroyed your altars. Ves neviecha hargu v'charav, and they have killed your prophets by the sword. V'yivaseh ani levadi, I'm the only one left. V'yivaseh ani levadi, and they want to kill me too. Same exact answer. He doesn't change. Vayomer Hashem Elav, Hashem said, just remember, we're talking about Eliyahu. It's going to be real cut for you. Vayomer Hashem Elav, Hashem says to him, Leich shuv l'darkecha midbar ha-Damasek, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damasek, uvasa, and you will come. U'mashachtos chazoel ha-melech al-aram, and you will anoint Chazoel as the king over Aram. Ve'eis Yehu ve'nimshi timshach l'melech al-Yisrael, Yehu ve'nimshi, you will anoint as the king over Yisrael. Ve'es Elisha ben Shafat me'avel mechola, Timshach l'Navi tachtecha, and Elisha from Avel Mechola, you will anoint him as the prophet in your place. Rashi says, I'afshi b'nevuasecha, I do not want your prophecy. Because you are prosecuting my children, I don't want you to be the prophet anymore. Pasuk Yudzayin, verse 17. Whoever escapes the sword of Chazal will be killed by Yehu. Whoever gets away from the sword of Yehu will be killed by Elisha. I will leave over in the Jewish people only 7,000. Only the knees that did not bow to the Baal. And the mouths that did not kiss the Baal. There could have been an incredible tshuva from this eighth famine. And there almost was, but it didn't work. And Eliyahu HaNavi therefore says, it's over. I don't have any purpose in being here. The Jews have forsaken you, Hashem. It's worthless. It's pointless. And Hashem brings him to Har Sinai to teach him that the job of the Navi is to defend the Jewish people under all circumstances. Eliyahu HaNavi refuses to accept it. Now, we are not going to judge Eliyahu HaNavi. Remember, we're still talking about Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is one of the greatest Navim to ever walk the face of the earth, which means a Navi means someone who is closer to Hashem than other people. That means Eliyahu HaNavi was not as close as Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest Navi, but he is one of the people, he is the person who has gotten one of the closest ever to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we are not going to criticize Eliyahu HaNavi, but the Navi who criticizes Eliyahu HaNavi, Hashem does. And Eliyahu HaNavi refuses to bend. So Hashem says, if that's the case, then I'm replacing you. But it's not without consequence. Hashem says, okay, we're going to do it your way. There's going to be massive destruction. Chazal, Yehu, Elisha is the formula for massive destruction. There's going to be a lot of blood spilled in Eretz Yisrael. First Chazal, and whoever escapes that, then Yehu, and whoever escapes that, then Elisha. Now, we talked about at the time that it didn't happen in that order. We're going to discuss that, not tonight, but we'll get to that Bli Neder probably next week. But that's what's going to happen now. There's going to be carnage. That's what's going to happen. Because that's what the Jews deserve. And Eliyahu HaNavi was not willing to defend the Jewish people. And therefore Hashem says, okay, we're going to do it your way, but I'm not keeping you as Navi. We're switching you out. We're going to have a new system going forward, but we're going to do it your way now. And we're going to destroy. There's going to be incredible destruction. It's not, I just want to emphasize to you, it's not that the Jews didn't deserve destruction. They did. This is not something being brought on the Jewish people. The Jewish people were totally innocent victims over here. They were doing terrible averus. But Eliyahu HaNavi did not try to defend them. Now, we don't know what would have happened if Eliyahu HaNavi would have tried. But the fact of the matter is, he didn't. And the Jews, therefore, now have to endure terrible destruction. That's what's going to happen. But Hashem makes it clear, how is it going to happen? It's going to happen through three changes. Chazal over Aram, Yehu over the Bnei Yisrael, over the Northern Kingdom, and Elisha over you. That's how it's going to happen. And that brings in the ninth famine. The ninth famine, which is the last one that has to do with food, because the tenth one doesn't have to do with food. The ninth one, the last one that has to do with food, is to bring about this incredible destruction of the Northern Kingdom, of the Southern Kingdom. And it is through these three people who are the new
world order,
right? That's right. Chazal replaces Ben-Hadad, his father. Yehu replaces Achav. I mean, Achav's son, really, but Achav's family. And Elisha replaces Eliyahu HaNavi. What's that?
Yosef, you're talking about this total destruction before Mashiach times, but
I don't know about Yosef. No. I don't know. We're not talking about before Mashiach over here. This is not Mashiach time. This is the time of Elisha. Mashiach time.
Okay.
Now, this new world order, it's going to happen through a famine. Now, a famine, as we said, is a tochacha, is an admonishment. And the purpose of a famine is to bring about tshuva. We learned already when the great famine hit and they were in Shomron. Remember, even Yehoram, the son of Ahav, who was a Rasha, even he was moved by the famine. If you remember, he was on the wall and the woman says that they're arguing over who's going to eat whose child. And he's like, you know, remember that even there was some tshuva going on there. There was a little bit of tshuva. And we'll talk about it, Mitzvah Hashem, probably next week, that because there was some tshuva, therefore it did not happen in the order that it says over here. There was some delay in the destruction. But when the people stopped with tshuva and they slipped into their old ways, the destruction hits. And this ninth famine is the famine that brings about the destruction through these three people, through Hazael, Yehu, Elisha. It's incredible to me that they're all mentioned in the same pasuk, Elisha being the successor to Eliyahu Navi, the huge, incredible Navi, and Hazael, on the other hand, being a Rasha, Yehu starting out as a tzaddik, ending up as a Rasha. But that's what we have. Now, what we're going to do, I have one more thing to share with you before we stop, I just want to set up for next week first. What we're going to do now is we're going to trace the which we already talked about. We're going to now put them in order, the details of Hazael, Yehu, Elisha, what this pasuk means, that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael will be destroyed by Yehu, and whoever escapes the sword of Yehu will be destroyed by Elisha. We're going to discuss what that means. What's it talking about? Who was killed by Elisha? Who was killed by Yehu? What is that all about? We're going to discuss those things and put them in context. We're also, again, probably not going to finish all this next week. For sure not going to finish all this next week. Where does the succession plan of Eliyahu, Elisha, Gehazi fit in this story? And that Gehazi fails, remember, loses his chelik in Olam Haba. And remember who replaces Gehazi? Remember? Yonah.
Right.
Yonah ben Amittai becomes the one who seems to be playing the Gehazi role in the proper way. It seems. We'll talk about that too. But this is what we're setting up over here. We're putting this all together. But I want to end with one last thing about famines. The 10th famine, which we might be enduring right now, is not about food or water. It's about the word of Hashem. Because the 10th famine is the famine of the neshama. We're a guf and a neshama. That's how we started. We have both a body and a soul. The way Hashem gives tochacha, the way Hashem announces, remember who I am, remember I'm here, is by withholding food. Because a human being must sit up and pay attention when there's no food. And that forces a person to rethink life. The 10th famine is about the neshama. And here's the thing. The neshama brings everything full circle. Because, as I've described many times, before Adam and Rishon ate from the Eitz Hadas, we experienced spirituality, ruchnius, the same way we experience physicality. Which means, just as a person feels hungry if they miss a meal, you would feel real feelings. It would be a spiritual feeling, but a real feeling of hunger if you missed mincha. Today, a person can miss mincha for days and not think about it. That's because after eating from the Eitz Hadas, physicality became powerful and it feels real. Spirituality is ephemeral. It doesn't feel like it's real. You have to really work at it to experience spirituality. But that's a result of the Eitz Hadas. Before that, it somehow, again, we're using physical terms over here, but it's the best way to explain it, is that the same way we can experience physical hunger, physical pain, physical deprivation, that's the way one would feel about spirituality before eating from the Eitz Hadas. But today, if a person is deprived of spiritual things, they can die a spiritual death and not even know they're dying. It would be like Hashem took away all the nerve endings. And a person got a huge gash, they're gushing blood, and they don't realize it. They go about their business as if nothing's happening until they just drop dead because they can't, there's no blood left. Right? That's what's happening to us spiritually. That's what can happen because we have no nerve endings. Obviously, our job is to ignite those nerve endings, to bring them out, to make them real. So the last famine, Hashem says, I'm going to take away, not something which will force you to wake up and find me. I'm going to take away the word of Hashem so that if you want to ignore me, you can ignore me. It's going to make it that if you want to find me, you're going to have to do the work. You're going to have to do the work, first of all, to realize that I'm missing and then to find me. That's the last famine. It's completely different than the other nine, but that's the one that brings about Mashiach. Because that's the one that forces us. See, the other nine, Hashem is the one who's doing the work. He's doing something we can't ignore. But the last one, we can and do ignore. And Hashem says, I want you to look for me. I want you to notice that I'm not there, but you got to notice it. I'm not giving you any help on that one. I helped you 9 times. But the 10th one, that's your job. You figure out that you're missing something and then look for me. What we see in our day, which I think that they never, in the past, I don't think anybody realized this would happen. What we see in our day is that when Hashem's Shechina is so distant, the world becomes such a terrible place that people really do cry out for Hashem. Even people who don't realize what they're crying out for are crying out for Hashem. Jews, non-Jews, all over the place. People are so directionless, they want something. Most of the time they don't know what they want, but they realize there is something missing. We know what's missing. But that's the famine of the word of Hashem. It's similar, but very different to the other nine famines.
So from Adam to Lamech, it's what, 10 generations? Because Noah was the 10th generation, right, from Adam? And then from Noah to Avram, another 10,
Lamech,
right?
Lamech is the 9th generation.
Okay, so 9th. And then from Lamech to Avram, then is 11 generations,
right?
And then you have Yitzchak and Yaakov back to back with Abraham.
Right.
And then from Yaakov to Ruth is how many?
I don't know how you count that. I'm not sure how you count that.
Okay. And then Ruth from Ruth to David is 4.
Right.
Right. And then from David to Eliyahu, it's the same, isn't it? It's the same generation?
No. No, you have to count down the, Shlomo, Rechavam, Avia, Asa, Shaphat. You got to count down the kings over there.
So we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you can figure it out, but
I'm just thinking that the longest it's been is 11 generations until this one.
Well, this one, this one's the big one. But unless we've been enduring it ever since, I don't know when this one started.
Well, the longest one was 3 years. So either way, it's the longest and the furthest.
Well, okay, we don't know how long the one in Noach's day went. We don't know how long that was for.
True.
We don't know.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, and also Adam's. I don't know how long that's considered for. But
Mitzrayim was 7. And there was
Me. We may either we are in the 10th or we're starting, or the 10th is coming. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.